It's a pleasure to be here. It's a wonderful, I want to say thank you very, very much for the opportunity to be here at the Skills Center. I'm Claire Petrich, and I'm Commissioner at the Port of Tacoma. President, reconvening the special Port of Tacoma Commission meeting of August the 15th, 2019. We previously called our meeting to order at 11:30. We recused ourselves into executive session and discussed three litigation or potential litigation items pursuant to RCW 42.3.110. No votes, no actions were taken. So, present with me today are Commissioners Barzano, Commissioner Meyer, Commissioner Johnson, and Commissioner McCarthy. To begin, will you please join us in a Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you so much. So as I said, it's a great pleasure for us to be here, and we had the opportunity to meet Michelle Ledbetter on our way in this morning, and she showed us the beautiful campus that we're part of today. So I'd like to invite her to please come forward and to tell us a little bit more. Give us some opening comments.
Well, thank you for being here today. It's a real honor to host you, and I certainly invite you to come back when the magic is here, when our students are in session. It's pretty amazing. I do have a video that I'd like to show. It gives a nice overview of the Skills Center. But essentially, Skills Centers are designed to be regional facilities where multiple school districts can give their students access to high-demand career and technical education programs, essentially for juniors and seniors to really dive into careers, to determine what it is they want to do, what it is they don't want to do, to make sure that their post-secondary plans, that there's a clear action plan for that, whether that's straight to employment, apprenticeships, two-year, four-year, but that students have the opportunity to really explore careers and understand what it is that they think they want to pursue. If we could start the video.
Skills Center is different and exciting.
There are so many opportunities that I had no idea about.
It's not much like a high school, it's more like we're here already in college.
They give us so much like support and opportunities that we would never have normally.
We tackle everything together, everything's about teamwork.
It's really important for students to experience what a career is like.
It's just a wonderful opportunity to really parallel that work world.
You're actually not just sitting in a classroom, you're getting on the job, you're doing hands-on things, you're learning what you need to know for after high school when you're actually in the business.
It's a lot different than in a classroom setting where you might mock those kind of things, but you'd never be able to do it in a real life setting.
It's more fast paced. There's a lot more work to it.
That's the best thing here in this kitchen is you're moving all day. You're never sitting down in here.
It's providing as much of a realistic simulated experience as we possibly can.
My teacher was telling me about the companies that he worked for and all the experiences that he had.
The teachers have lived and breathed it.
It's nice that he comes straight from the industry, so he knows exactly what they're going to be expecting.
It's not only their personal experience and their technical skill, but it's also the connections that they have with our advisory committees and business partners that allows us to connect students to job shadows, potential employment.
We've got some great students that have went on for composites and are working for Boeing and, gosh, out of high school have jobs, which is pretty awesome.
Our teacher goes through and refines our resumes, and Boeing and AIM and all these other aerospace companies come in and they interview us, and so we can make connections and show them the parts that we've made.
Here at the Skills Center, everyone is passionate about what they want to do, and they're really looking forward to getting out in the shop, to getting into the books, and getting work done.
Every single person, it seems like, that goes here in any class is motivated because this is what they want to do and they have an actual goal.
Many of our classes have credit equivalency, so a student in criminal justice would earn a civics credit, a PE credit, and an elective credit. So it's a way that students are earning their high school credit. In addition to, all of our programs have dual credit, so they're earning college credit at the same time.
It's actually a great thing for students that want to be able to get a feeling for what it might be like before they actually go out and apply for a job in that industry.
Sometimes it's almost as valuable to find out what you don't want to do as what it is you do want to do.
A friend of mine wanted to do one thing, but when she came to the Skills Center, she actually found interest in something else, and now she's a nurse.
We have students who are heading to two-year universities, four-year universities, apprenticeships. So it's really about making sure students are making career choices based on experiences and that they're pursuing careers that they are passionate about and that they know they want to do because they've experienced them.
I highly recommend this program.
It's one of the nicest places.
You will learn a lot of leadership skills and responsibilities.
Develop professionally, develop personally, and be able to take yourself to the next level.
Talk with your counselor to make sure that you're taking the right classes so you have room in your schedule, your junior or senior year, or both, so that you're able to come to the Skills Center. Documents. One is a brochure that outlines our 14 programs. We have 13 programs here on campus, and then we partner with Clover Park Technical College. Our students take cosmetology on site, so they are actually on that campus the entire time. And then the handout is kind of some nuts and bolts about the Skills Center. We serve 10 school districts throughout Pierce County, 27 high schools, and essentially students are at their home high school half the day, and typically those graduation requirements, English, math, science, and then they spend half the day with us, the equivalent of three periods in one program. So as Mr. Capetto says in the video, it's one of my favorite lines, it's just as important to learn what you don't want to do as it is what you do want to do. And we have a number of students who completely discovered their passion here, and we have other students that say, wow, I had no idea that's what nurses did, and I think I want to pursue something else. And they have that opportunity. So either way, it's a win because it saves students time and money after high school. They're not pursuing degrees or careers that they really maybe don't know much about. They're also saving time and money because, as the video shows, all of our programs earn college credits. So for example, students in our firefighting earn 18 credits at Bates before they even step on that campus. So they are certainly saving time and money and tuition and the duration of their post-secondary. I would like to introduce Superintendent Tom Siegel and Chief Technology Officer Michael Christensen.
Hi.
Both of these gentlemen are the reason this center is here. We're entering our 10th year. This will be our 10th anniversary. But Mike and Tom were instrumental in making sure that this Skills Center was built and that the students of Pierce County had the same access to a Skills Center as students throughout the state.
That's
so. I know you have a meeting. I could talk about the Skills Center all day long.
Well, we'd love to just have an opportunity maybe to ask a couple
Absolutely.
Of questions. I would love to say thank you. I know how important it is, and I really resonated with that comment. I remember taking a welding class one time and deciding that was definitely not something I ever wanted to do. So it's a great importance to have that wide range of things. What is your enrollment, and do you have any foreign students who come here?
We will serve this year about 600 students. We're just near capacity, so we typically have 250 to 300 students in our morning session. They're 2.5 hours. As far as, was it international students?
Yeah.
We actually have had exchange students who are attending one of our participating high schools that have had the opportunity to come here. We actually had two exchange students last year, so that was a great opportunity. I think the other piece is, if you're able to come back during the year, is that we have such a wide range of students. We certainly serve what some would call the upper end, our advanced placement, international baccalaureate, very four-year bound students. And we also have students who have realized maybe at 19 that they need to re-engage and they're returning to school to graduate, and a whole lot in the middle. But it's a really nice mix of students. And it's not just for one type of student. It's making sure a student who's pursuing a four-year degree needs to know what career they're pursuing just as much as a student who's entering the workforce directly.
Okay. And we would love to have people come on the day that they're preparing the pizza at the right time. Those are great photographs.
we would be happy to have our culinary arts program catered.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there other questions?
I actually just have a couple comments and then maybe a question. First of all, I do appreciate your leadership, Michelle. And Tom, I particularly, being a number one fan club of yours out here in this part of the community, it's very important just to recognize how countywide this program really is. But the question I think I would have is, how do you develop your programs that you've outlined here? Because we're, one of the topics we would be interested in is maritime, logistics, those sorts of things. And I'm reminded, in fact, I had attended a meeting yesterday, and I happened to have lunch with Mayor Roscoe of the city of Fife, and she was complimenting us, I say Port, Tide Flats businesses, on the basis of the Tacoma School District Tide Flats certification program, which I had never heard of. I just was really pleased to see that integration at the high school level. And so what I'm wondering is how do you go about your program development, and who has to approve that, and what role do businesses play in that?
So certainly our focus is on high demand, high wage careers, making sure that what we are offering meets the need of really our local community. Our programs are approved through OSPI. We go through a process with them, but prior to getting to that, we certainly work with Workforce Central, our business partners, ensuring that when we start programs that we also have a pipeline that we're going to fill. And so we, you mentioned maritime, we actually, this campus has been built in four different stages. We have completed the initial original design campus, but we have now been provided with pre-design funding from the state to start new construction. And our goal is to move some programs out of our Olympic building, which would then free up a shop and classroom space for us to expand our manufacturing. And our goal is to start to look towards maritime and positions and careers that are available in the port, and start to feed that pipeline as well. I think the greatest example is our aerospace programs, that generally 70% of those students are employed within weeks of graduation. Wow. And they are filling that area of the manufacturing sector, but we want to make sure that we are providing other opportunities for students. So certainly looking at hopefully future partnerships with the port and being able to start to feed that pipeline.
Thank you.
That's great. Are you oversubscribed, or how does the student get in, or do you have more students that want to get in than you have space for, and then how do you sort through that mess?
So students technically apply, really it's a first come, first serve basis. They fill out an application. We work with all of our sending high schools and their counselors. So it's part of applying to the Skill Center. They do at the same time that they would be registering for their classes for the following year. We certainly have some programs that are full within probably 5 days that we open our application. We still have room in others. So there are some that fill very quickly. Automotive is one of those. And I think that's because so many automotive programs in high schools have been closed. So I think there are only 3 automotive programs in high schools throughout the county. So obviously that would be one of the reasons it's so popular. Our medical careers program, students earn their certified nursing assistant license. And so we have some that fill very quickly.
Thank you.
Commissioner McCarthy.
This is the first time I've been to your campus and hadn't seen it before. Really quite striking and really impressive program. I hadn't been introduced to the details of what you did before today, so that's helpful. I had the opportunity this week to speak at the graduation ceremony for the Tide Flat certification program of the Tacoma School District. Leslie Barstow of our staff has worked on that for a long time. Seemed like a great program. I think we had roughly 20 students that graduated, introduced to various potential jobs in the marine, maritime, tide flat business industry. So in taking part in that program, I learned a lot more also about maritime industry jobs, merchant marine type jobs. Had an opportunity to visit the Port Townsend high school-based maritime school, which is quite impressive. So I'm happy of the work you're doing. I think the port will be really happy to work with you and help identify for your new structure some marine maritime related directions that some of our students could have.
That would be great. Yes, we've started some initial conversations and look forward to continuing that.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. I'll just follow up also that in Tacoma, at least, there is a youth marine foundation and a program where through the Sea Scouts, there are students who participate regularly. Almost every year now for about the past 10 years, a student has been sent from Tacoma down to the Cal Maritime Academy. And so Cal Maritime Academy feeds many of the shipping lines and much of the industry and is a great program. There are maritime academies throughout the United States, but it's just interesting for you to get to know more about that. And those folks come up here every so often.
Perfect, definitely.
Just to follow up with what's already been said, I appreciate, I know we all do all the work that all of you do because so many times young adults not really are sure what they want to do. So the more you can open up to their minds of what is out there, the more opportunities they will have in choosing what they want. And there's a lot of love for people working with their hands. You know, everybody always says you should go to college, do this. Sometimes college is not the right choice for some of these young adults. So I appreciate what you do.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, Madam President, for the record, I wanted to say that Director Ledbetter has been kind enough to offer a tour once the meeting adjourns to anybody who's
terrific.
Interested in actually seeing what they do here.
Thank you very much. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for
thank
the presentation.
Thank you so much for being here. We're happy to host.
Talking with you. We're delighted to be here. Mm-hmm. Right. Moving on then with our agenda, it's the moment for the consent agenda, and I'd like to propose a motion to approve the minutes of July 18th and the check wire certification.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? If not, those in favor of accepting the consent agenda, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. And at this time, we have an opportunity for public comment. I don't have anyone signed up, but if anyone would like to make public comment, you are welcome to do so. And if not, we will move right ahead into our agenda. Oh, you are. Thank you very much. Well, you raised your hand a moment before because you're part of this wonderful Skill Center.
Well, thank you very much. I'm Tom Siegel, Superintendent of the Bethel School District. We're their host school district for the Skill Center. And since you asked for comments, I'll just put out a couple of items here real quick. And it's reinforced that I had a chance to talk to your staff folks here. As you heard, there is a desire to expand the Skill Center beyond the three buildings you see here. The Bethel School District, as a host district, already has purchased a building just down the way here, 10,000 square foot, and that would be expanded and allow additional courses, either in advanced manufacturing or the maritimes related area to expand, actually be added. The other thing is, I represent the Bethel School District. We have 120,000 people. As Don knows, from 224th North, there are 80,000 people who live here. And have essentially no Pierce Transit access. We have, 202 square miles. We only have 3 miles of Pierce Transit, and it's all on Pacific Avenue. Meridian and Canyon don't have it. And for the standpoint of the Fredericks Industrial Area, which I think you have a really interesting, great interest in, there is no bus service out there. And so people who might want to actually take the bus and get down to work there have no way to get there. It also will relieve the congestion. And I know there's concern to make sure that the traffic on Canyon flows nicely so people can get out, or the trucks can get off of 512 and onto 512 or wherever they're gonna go and move right down there expeditiously. So if Pierce Transit were to expand their services to include Canyon, you would have the opportunity to reduce some of the congestion that's occurring, ensure the buses, the trucks get to where they need to go quickly. The other thing is, it would allow more students to attend this facility. We currently have 10 school districts that we have. Tacoma Public Schools does not provide transportation. All the others do. So you would have more kids from Tacoma coming here for the courses, and I think that would make a difference in their lives. So I just wanted to advise you that the Bethel School District Board of Directors intends to approve a resolution to the Pierce County Council and also the Pierce Transit Board to expand bus lanes into this area to handle the growing population that's out here. And as you know, there's currently a zoning proposal that would change and increase the housing and commercial density, including Ronk Canyon. So to try to make sure that the trucks flow, that's something that needs to be considered, I think.
Yeah, it's clear on our way out and clear to you every day that how rapid the growth in this area has been. So yeah. It increases the need.
But particularly when you think about Meridian and the fact that there's no public transportation along Meridian, it's just crazy. It's just unacceptable. And Canyons, yes, is a problem, but just try Meridian as being a problem. And something has to change. So I appreciate your leadership, Tom, and
the
board's leadership.
Thank you very much. I'm actually going to make a request. When this meeting ends this afternoon, I'm headed to the airport and we'll be going to two of our sister cities in the Ukraine and Croatia. There is interest in those areas in a lot of the education programs and the international education that we have to offer. So if you have anything that you could give to me when we leave, I'd really like to take it with me. And it'll be used. So thank you very much. Okay. So at this time, we're very much looking forward to staff updates. Just on the agenda, I just want to make a note that as we begin with our staff updates, we are pulling one item from the action agenda, which is a number C. So that item will not be included in the agenda. So our staff updates begin with Alicia Pena and Debbie Bailey. And this is on the all hazard mitigation plan update, something of great concern to everyone. So we're glad to have you here today.
All right, so I'm going to start by introducing myself. My name is Alicia Pena. I am the newest member of the planning team, taking over as the facilities planner because my predecessor retired in December. I've been in this role about 2 months now, so it's an honor to be here today with you guys and talk a little bit about our work with the hazard mitigation plan. Before starting this role, I was with the Texas Department of Transportation, where I served in their maritime division as the freight program coordinator. It's exciting to be back in the Northwest, where I'm from originally. So one of the projects that I am leading is the update of the Port of Tacoma All-Hazard Mitigation Plan update. This is in partnership with Pierce County Department of Emergency Management. Now, some of you guys might be familiar with this effort because we came before you and asked for approval back in 2016. That plan will expire in July of 2023, so we are hoping to get this update going so we can have a new plan in place for when that one expires. One thing that I would like to be clear is that this all-hazard mitigation plan is really a roll-up of a bunch of separate actions and initiatives that are undertaken by port staff on a regular basis. So while we might come before you every couple of years to talk about the all-hazard mitigation plan, this is really something that is on the minds of port staff every day. So at this point, I would like to introduce Debbie Bailey. Debbie Bailey is about to give us all a crash course in what the hazard mitigation plan is and why we are participating in this effort. She has been with the Pierce County Department of Emergency Management for 14 years. In that role, she does spatial hazard analysis and helps local jurisdictions develop and update their hazard mitigation plans. This is a significant undertaking because the Port of Tacoma is just one of 81 local jurisdictions that she is supporting with this effort. So at this point, I'd like to introduce Debbie Bailey, and you can take it away.
Welcome, Debbie. Thank you so much for having me come out here and be able to talk about the mitigation plan update. Yes, the Port of Tacoma has started this endeavor with Pierce County developing their mitigation plan back in 2008 and developed their mitigation plan, and this is the second time from that original plan that it's going through the update. And this is one of the requirements that FEMA does have, is to have a pre-authorization of the mitigation plan, because when it's all gone through the updated process, we'll be back before you. Sometime in June to be able to formally adopt it by resolution. And so some of the things we'll be going through, each of their seven different sections to the mitigation plan, and we'll be going through each of those seven sections and updating the areas that need to be done. The greatest emphasis will be on Section 4, which is the risk assessment section, and then Section 5, which is where the mitigation strategies have been identified that Alicia was talking about, that when grant funding becomes available, that team is going to be going after those grants to potentially go after the projects and reduce the strategies and the risks that have been identified. So we'll go through all of that. I'll be changing some of the mapping. As Alicia said, I do all the GIS hazard analysis on that. The FEMA-approved mitigation flood maps were changed in February of 2017, so I'll be using a new map for that. I'm going to be using DNR's mapping for the potential liquefaction, which I know would be of great interest to the port. So there's different mapping I'll be using for that. Landslide, using again DNR's layer for that, for deep landslides and shallow landslides. Those will be some of the significant mapping changes that I'll be doing. And one of the other great things that we're doing differently with this update, in the past, everybody's kind of met with their discipline. So it's been like the fire districts and the school districts and the cities and towns. And the Port of Tacoma falls into the category that we call special purpose districts. But with this update, I've seen over in the Gig Harbor side, they know if we have any type of earthquake, something happens, that Narrows Bridge is coming down. And so they've just worked together so well. The fire districts, the city and the town, they come together with their planning. And I've observed this for the last 14 years, and I was like, we need to replicate this in other parts of the county, and the mitigation plan update was the perfect opportunity to do that. So with this update, rather than everybody meeting in their disciplines, I've broken the county into 5 different geographical areas that share a lot of the same commonality and hazards, with the hopes of developing those close-knit relationships and developing the resiliency and really working together with the folks in the different jurisdictions within those designated areas. And I'm hoping to be able to continue those regional meetings of working together that way after the mitigation plan is long been adopted and approved, and at least meeting once or potentially twice a year so that those relationships can continue. The outline of this update, what I'm hoping to be able to do is have all 81 jurisdictions ready with their plan updates by the end of December, so that at the beginning of January, we can submit the plans to the state. We have a lot of requirements that we need to be able to be sure that we've met in the plan, and so the state will have 30 days to review that and make sure that we've met all of those requirements. And then once we have, then the plan will move forward to FEMA. FEMA has 45 days to be able to review it. And again, if we've met all of the requirements, then it will come back. And then at that point, we will be back before you to be able to formally adopt that plan. And then once we get that resolution, then that's forwarded on to the state and to FEMA, and then they'll put it into a formal letter. And then that will get embedded into the mitigation plan, and then your plan will be good for 5 more years. And one of the main reasons for wanting to be able to maintain a mitigation plan, there's a lot of different reasons, but one of the main ones is the fact that it does open up grant funding opportunity. So there's a once a year grant called a PDM grant that comes out. It's called a pre-disaster mitigation grant, and probably that'll be coming out in the latter part of this month or the first part of September. It's a region on a statewide level, or all the states are competing against the grant funding for this one. And so with that grant, FEMA will pay fund 75% of a project, and then that would leave 25% of that project for the jurisdiction to be able to fund. The other type of grant is called the HMGP grant, and that's a post-hazard mitigation grant opportunity that will come out. Those are, once we've had a presidentially declared disaster in the state of Washington, that opens up a window of money, and that amount is always kind of, it fluctuates. And with that, again, FEMA would fund 75% of that project, and then that 25%, the state usually, and I'm not going to say every time, but got to allow a little wiggle room in there, but most of the time, the state will split that 25% with the jurisdiction. So it's a pretty great way to get a project funded for 12.5% with that. So that's kind of it in a quick crash. In that case, a crash course of what we're going through to update the mitigation plan.
You've got a lot of work to do between now and December.
We do. And we've got a lot of new folks with going through this mitigation plan update this time, between moving to different positions and retirement. So we've got a lot of new people that we're bringing on board with this update. And it's great to be able to build those new relationships.
Yeah, that's terrific. Thank you. I'm sure there's some questions from the commissioners, unless you have further.
Nope, I'm great.
I have one. With regards to the participants, how about the Puyallup tribe? Have they been contacted? Okay.
Yes. They're not in with our 81 jurisdictional plans, but they do have their standalone plan. And they've actually gone through two updates. I just completed working with them in 2018 to update their mitigation plan.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask, Debbie, when I think of the tide flats, you know, we're maybe half owner of the tide flats, and then the other entities, private businesses, the tribe, for example. How do you incorporate or advise individuals of what this mitigation plan means to them, or how they are they involved at all?
It can be done through the public outreach, which is one of the requirements of the mitigation plan, is for the jurisdictions to have public outreaches. To be able to involve the public in the mitigation planning process.
I guess where I'm coming from is we've got a pretty good customer base. I hope that our customers are contacted so they got the opportunity to at least be aware of this planning effort in the case of a major disaster, because we rely upon them to really be the first line of defense or response. The other piece is just making certain we have good coverage of our tide flat businesses to know what the planning effort is all about. Because they will be impacted significantly by what it is that we do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can I actually chime in a bit on that? One of the groups that we will be engaging with through this effort is the FSO meeting. I believe that's Facility Security Officers meeting. And in those meetings, we have representation from labor, different terminal operators, Coast Guard, you know. It's like the Tide Flats working group for
Very good.
Safety issues.
I know we've been actively engaged for a long time. Commissioner
Johnson. So with that comment, what is the status of our update at the Port of Tacoma?
We're just kicking it off, so we've started kind of talking.
You're busy too, then.
We're a team, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know.
Well, at least you have one, right?
What was that?
At least you have a plan, and it just has to be updated.
Correct,
That's a lot different than not having a plan at all.
Right. Well, and so as I started to talk a little bit about earlier, this is really a roll-up of a bunch of ongoing actions and initiatives, and so we'll just be essentially reporting out on what's been underway since 2016. But that being said, this does spark life into new conversations around hazard mitigation planning, so we're kind of reacting as it stirs up more interest in this.
That's the advantage of having a five-year update. Mm-hmm. People have to revisit the issue.
Kind of herds the cats, right?
It does. Good practice.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yes.
And, you know, I think I should just say, you know, for the record, I do believe I misspoke and said that our plan expires in 2023, but that's actually July 23rd of 2020. So it's next year. Forgive me.
Thank you. I'm glad you said that, because I thought we were really getting a head start. But
yeah, no, it was one of those things where after it came out of my mouth, I was like, oh, that was wrong. So I apologize for that.
Well, that puts more pressure on you, actually.
Yeah. Right. I wish we had that much time.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments?
I can leave these brochures with you.
Terrific.
It's a little bit of the requirements of the mitigation planning.
Great.
And then on the one side, it shows in the disciplines all the different planning partners, and on the back side, how the regional groups have been divided up.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Right, and good luck with all the work that you have ahead of you. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that. Eric Johnson, you actually are up next on the agenda for the 2019 second quarter performance goals and expectations.
Thank you, Madam President. For the record, Eric Johnson, Port Executive Director. Just entering into my third month here. I've got two months behind me, and nothing's gone wrong yet. The performance goals and expectations document, you're very familiar with this because you've been reviewing it for, you know, quite a long time, very many months. I want to draw your attention to two items and answer any questions you have about any of the other ones. In section 2A, land use and transportation planning is the category. One of the tasks is to create a timeline and scope for updating the Port of Tacoma strategic plan by the fourth quarter. That is underway. Begun the process of outlining what an RFP would look like, and intend to come to you next month with authorization to execute, to publish an RFP, interview consultants, and execute a contract. I would expect, or I would hope, that we have at least one commissioner participate in that review process, or possibly two.
Great.
And it's still pretty early in that arena, but you got a memo in your packet last week, I believe, that outlines the thinking that we have so far. And the goal is to be really running, or, you know, starting that process in 2020, January 2020. That's the goal that I have in my mind. And that's about the fastest I think we can get going. But that's going to be something that's going to be a big piece of 2020 for us. And so I wanted to call your attention to that. And I can take questions on that right now before I move to the next one if you want.
Great. Yeah. Questions?
I just have I have one comment. I really appreciate the fact that you've done some outlining already and sending it to us well in advance of our action items. So I appreciate that. The one thing I would say, though, when I looked at the various categories, I think it was on your last page, when you say transportation, I'd like a little more definition as to what that is, because I think of road and rail as at least two elements within that. So all I can say is thank you for the advance information, and I think of transportation at least having those two elements.
I'd agree with that. Yep.
Mr. Johnson.
I think that's a great plan going forward. I want to caution everybody, to have a good strategic plan, you have to have an implementation plan. Otherwise, you just have a book of hopes and dreams. So if you want to get someplace, you have to be able to detail how you're going to get there. And it can provide an opportunity to get there, or it can provide, say, I can't do that. So I think it's a big project. We've done it before, and it's a big project, and I think you do a great job of doing that.
I couldn't agree more with your comment about an implementation plan. Yeah. Other questions? Okay, and the second item I'll draw your attention to is in the same section, actually, but number three, the Thorn Road property development. The note there indicates that we were expecting design authorization in August. That is going to happen. We're going to ask for that next month in September,
okay,
instead of August. We're teeing up the discussions about the Thorn Road property, initial design for that property, and that goes hand in hand with the Wapato Creek restoration project, which also has some design elements that we'll need approval for. So look for those next month. And I will also note regarding the Wapato Creek project, the port received a letter of support from the tribe, the Puyallup tribe, since you last met. And that's very good news. It's a full endorsement of the project with conditions that are all very reasonable. And so that's a piece of good news for that project.
And that is the letter that goes to the Army Corps of Engineers?
That's correct.
Correct. Thank you so much. That is great news.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very good news. And I don't have anything else to draw your attention to, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Sure. Questions? While people are thinking of their questions, I'll just note that over the past 20-some years, we have had some very interesting and a variety of ways that we've approached the strategic planning at the Port of Tacoma. And it's going to be an exciting process as you move ahead into 2020. 2020 is a great year to be doing a strategic plan, just from the 2020 optics of it, I suppose. But full engagement, I think, on the part of the community, the stakeholders, and the port in not only coming up with ideas, but having the ability as the plan is developed to research and to strategize within specific areas.
And there is no single template for how a port does a strategic plan. Right. Different ports do them different ways, and I've seen a lot of them. I've gone back as part of the, since I've been hired, I've gone and sought out a bunch of them and looked through them. And I've seen some that I like, and I've seen some that I don't like. And that's part of the thinking that went into the outline that you saw, was part of take the things that I liked. And that was not a solo effort, by the way. There was a lot of work done with staff on that, particularly planning department, and also contracts and purchasing. Mr. Little and Deirdre both have been very, very helpful in all of that, along with engineering and environmental. So, and public affairs, because this plan is going to have a big public-looking piece to it. We're going to have a conversation with Pierce County, I mean the community of Pierce County, through this process if we do it right. And so we're going to have public affairs be a big piece of this process.
Great. Wonderful. Yes.
Just by way of comment to repeat myself, you've heard me say this before, but I really think this is the most important thing that we're going to do at this point in time in the history of the port, particularly in light of the fact that the alliance has been created and that's been flying along for 4 years, and our income at the Port of Tacoma is so heavily dependent on the 80% of our marine or our income that is controlled by activities of the alliance. So setting our priorities, setting the future, picking out exactly where the Port of Tacoma is going to do things in coordination with the alliance and separate and apart from the alliance. This is the most important, I think, aspect of our future. So I welcome your efforts and look forward to working on that.
Great. Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, just one clarifying question, if I can. I think you're going to do a great job in the strategic plan. I'm fully supportive of that. I want to talk just for a second about the Puyallup River Bridge that's supposedly supposed to open. It's really late, but it's supposed to open someday. And it says, I thought the person from Tacoma who described it the last time says, it can't take loaded trucks. It can only take empty trucks. And this says the delay is allowed for a weight increase. So I'm not quite sure what that means.
Are you looking at a part of the strategic plan?
I mean, I'm looking at number two.
There. Yeah. I read it.
It's
I thought it was good news.
2D, the last comment. And the reason I bring that up is it says increased weight, because I thought when we rebuilt the bridge, it'd be able to be a tremendous asset to the port because it'd take a full-size truck, not an empty truck. And now it's going to take an empty truck.
Yvette Mason, would you like to?
And Mike, what year is it going to open in?
Yeah, I was going to say, need a lifeline.
I heard. Good afternoon, Yvette Mason, Government Affairs. The bridge is scheduled to open in the last half of September. So looking at today's date, in about 4 to 6 weeks. One of the things that they discovered was that the bearings in the bridge needed to be replaced, and that was a separate contract from the initial work.
And they just discovered that?
I didn't personally, but the city did discover that during the construction phase. As you'll recall from some of the presentations that we've had, we called it the Puyallup River Bridge, and then the Fishing Wars Memorial Bridge. It's actually, as I recall, 6 separate bridges. And the city of Tacoma, in order to get grant funding, broke it up into some of those sections for repair. Prior to the work, there was a 10,000-pound weight limit on the bridge, and the work that was done was before where it started going up on the west end of the bridge to about the shore on the west side. So the span has not been repaired, nor has the part from the span back down to Highway 99, okay? So about a third of the bridge, third to half of the bridge, was being repaired this time. That was how much funding that they had received. Mm-hmm. So most of the damage and the restriction was at the west end of the bridge. When that is complete, that section is going to be wonderful, perfect. It's just that those sections that there hasn't been any work done on them, that section will still have a weight restriction. And the number that I have heard is 20,000 pounds. So it went from 10,000 to 20,000. My understanding is that that would be an empty semi. It would, you know, the truck's coming into the port. It would not be a loaded truck. The container would not be loaded.
It could take some box trucks of some sort, though.
And empties.
15,000 to 18,000. Yeah.
So that is my understanding, and the city is being fairly aggressive in trying to find the funding for those other sections of the bridge.
How's that going?
So far, I don't know if they've put in an application or not, but they have some plans on it, and I know it is a priority for them.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks very much. Commissioner McCarthy?
If I could, I just recalled, I didn't bring my notes with me on the a couple of things on the goals and objectives that at some point in time I want to talk about, but one that I hadn't mentioned was, and Commissioner Meyer has mentioned this before too, the South Intermodal Yard. Mm-hmm. Acquiring that property, which the Beltline has now owned for many, many years, that acquisition of that property to really control for a long length of time our usage of the property, I think is something that we, in terms of our strategy, need to talk about. We really need to talk about. I think that perhaps should be a high priority in terms of property acquisition. But just I throw that out as we get into this discussion.
I can assure you, Mr. McCarthy, that there have been discussions already between the port and Tacoma Rail on that issue, but they haven't reached any conclusion yet. Okay. But there is some action.
Maybe if we got that on our goals and objectives statement.
But we can update you next month on that.
Thank you.
Just one quick request. I recall quite some time ago we did a 2020 plan. I forget what year it was or whatever it is. It should be nice to get that information just to get an update about, you know, how far were we off, how far were we on as we move forward in our strategic plan. It's always nice, I believe, to look at the history and where we've gone.
My recollection, Commissioner, is that the presentation that we're getting ready to give you next month has a section in it.
Perfect.
That talks about the last one we did and what it recommended and probably what was accomplished and what wasn't.
Okay.
So I've actually seen some of that work already by staff.
Thank you.
Deirdre, did I get that right? Okay. Deirdre says yes.
Yes. Good. Great. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. We have a lot of work ahead and a lot of things to look forward to. That's great. The next item on our agenda is the Fredrickson Town Center update, an opportunity to really, now that we are here,
yes,
to hear more about the history and what's been going on. Rod Kuhn.
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Good afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be here. Actually, I drove around Fredrickson. I got here early, and if you haven't been out there recently, it's come a long way, quite literally. So in preparing to make this presentation, I did some research through old gateways, got some information from the EDB, et cetera, to give kind of a brief recap of the development of Fredrickson. And I call this the Fredrickson story really the power of planning, vision and cooperation, because certainly there was a tremendous amount of vision and planning that went into a very long and winding road that got to be the success we see today. Now, although the port first bought land in Fredrickson in 1968, you might be aware of that, I think the idea or the seeds of the importance of Fredrickson really date back to the 50s. So I want to go back to what the port looked like in
really cool
the 50s. So we're after World War II. You see ships that had been built by Todd Pacific Shipyard, and where those ships are is actually where the tote terminal is today. And we were Log City. We were a very industrial log, forest product, natural resource port. So what you see in the foreground is currently where Husky Terminal is. So again, this was an aerial from the 50s. at the time, I don't think this was actually strategic planning, but it was planning. The Port Commission hired a firm called TAMS, based in New York, and they're an engineering firm. And basically, they were given the task, or asked the question, if the port wants to grow and develop in the future, what does the port have to do? And TAMS came back with a very comprehensive plan that really, I think, served as a blueprint for growth for the port over the next 30, 40 years. One of the things they said is you need more land, you need more terminals, you need more industrial sites to create more jobs and bring more companies and more shipping activity to the port. So this, I have this book. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a fascinating book. They had a variety of schematics of how to best expand both the Blair and the Hylabus waterways. This shows the dredging that took place in the mid to late 60s as a result of the vision and the concepts presented in the TAMS book. The dredging created about 1,400 acres of additional land for the port that could be developed into a number of terminals, as you know, has happened over the years, and extended waterways so there were additional berth and terminals that could be built. A quote from that book, from that plan, said the industrial area required for new industrial sites is also going to grow. And TAMS in 1955 predicted that by 1975, 1,000 more acres would be needed. So in 1968, the port purchased about 510 acres of land. And this is actually the cover of the 1968 Port Annual Report. And that was highlighted the year that the purchase was made for $1.6 million. Finance did a quick calculation that in today's terms, that would be about $5.6 million of investment. So this was a gamble on the future, and it was a gamble that I think has paid off.
Rod, could I just clarify? The picture that's on that annual report is the old Kaiser aluminum.
Correct. That is not a picture
domes.
Of Frederickson.
Yeah, it's not a picture of Frederickson. Okay. I just wanted to make certain.
Duly noted. Thank you. And in the report, the port was kind of doing an ad for Frederickson in the annual report, saying it's ideally suited. Part of the concept was have land away from the waterfront because the port was concerned that we might run out of waterfront land. But have land away from the waterfront where manufacturing could take place and some of the products made at these sites could be shipped in or out of the port. So there'd still be a port connection. And this would be land that the port was willing to sell as opposed to just do long-term leases. This is a photo of the Frederickson area. This was taken in 1940. One of the first companies out there was a dynamite plant. It was called the Columbia Powder Plant. They had actually a tragic explosion there in 1940. It was one of only four dynamite plants in the state back in the day. Longtime Commissioner Jack Fabulich at one point when he spoke about Frederickson, he said, you know, it used to be a prairie out there, but I envision it growing into a very successful business park. So as the port worked to market Frederickson, there had been a lumber mill or two out in that area. Industrial Lumber Products was the first tenant at Frederickson, and they were on 17 acres of land. And then a number of other lumber companies set up shop out there, and many of their products were shipped through the port. And again, some of these companies bought land from the port. Now, like the Tide Flats, Frederickson is really a mix of privately owned and port-owned land. So Frederickson area overall is more than 2,000 acres. Of that, the port, again, purchased about 510 acres in the late 60s. With increased industrial activity, there was a concern over traffic and the need to improve roads out there. So I think it was 1984, the port basically put a moratorium on development until roads were improved. And that jumps us, this was an early ad for Fredrickson. You see not too much development out there. But a big year came in 1988 with the Canyon Road extension. And that is shown on the right side of this aerial photograph. Along with extending the road 1.75 miles, there were water and sewer connections were laid as part of this project. This is a photo of the ribbon cutting. Pictured, you see Jack Fabulich, Pierce County Council Member Bill Stoner, and Pierce County Executive Joe Stortini. So this was 1.7 miles of new road, a $4.7 million project, and the port share of that was $2.3 million.
Who's behind the balloons, do you know?
I think it's Larry Colleen.
Based upon the height? We
you
think
know,
it's
it
Executive
been.
Director Larry Colleen? Yeah, or maybe it was John McCarthy.
I don't know. John, were you?
I didn't have a white trench coat at that time.
I don't know.
But I think I was there, though.
It's like Woodstock. You think you were there.
That's right.
50 years ago today, as a matter of fact.
That's right. So I think this photo and this project really underscores the cooperation between the port, Pierce County, other entities, the state of Washington, and working with private industry to make something very important happen. So these improvements really set the stage for renewed marketing effort by the port, Pierce County, the Economic Development Board for Tacoma, Pierce County, and Pierce County Economic Development in the state. So, as always, a real team effort. So just real quickly, a few companies, and this is not a total comprehensive list, just a few of the highlights. Of course, Boeing, when they chose to locate in that area, that was a big deal for the region economically and for the Fredrickson brand, so to speak. Wing and Spar facility, a major employer, major investments. That helped spur Toray to buy land from the port. They bought 26 acres and built a $40 million plant. They're a major supplier for Boeing. Here's another ad, an artist's rendering of what Fredrickson looks like. And certainly on a good day, the Mount Rainier is part of the marketing effort as well. There are a few musical connections for Fredrickson, or have been over the years. There's a company, YCA Timber Tacoma, made parts for Young Chang pianos for a number of years and shipped those parts to South Korea. And then an offshoot of YCA Timber set up shop to make guitars at Fredrickson. And I own one of these. It is a fine guitar. Believe it or not, that's Peter Frampton pictured in this photo.
You've got a Woodstock theme, don't you?
But anyway, and then they got bought out by Fender, so they are no longer manufacturing it at Fredrickson. Medallion Foods is another company in the late 90s, purchased land from the port and are a major pasta manufacturer. They also make a tempura mix that is exported to Japan. James Hardy Building Products is another company, again, bringing jobs, bringing investment to the Fredrickson area and to Pierce County. Carlson Paving Products came in 1999. This facility, as you see here, is currently under an expansion effort, and that will be completed next year. Northwest Door came in 2006. And IKEA set up a major distribution center, and this was one of the more creative, wasn't
yes.
really a ribbon cutting. The Swedish tradition is to saw a log for the as part of the grand opening. So that's Governor Gregoire on site at that grand opening event. And then Niagara Bottling in 2014, Old Castle Infrastructure a few years later. Here is an aerial photo. I don't expect you to read any of the numbers there. This is supplied by Pierce County. Just a few statistics about Fredrickson. This is based on 2017 data. There are more than 21 acres of industrial land out here. And this is one of three manufacturing industrial centers in Pierce County. 37 companies are located here at Fredrickson. Accounting for about 4,300 jobs, $350 million in wages, and about 2.4 $1.4 billion in economic impact. So bottom line, I think Commissioner Jack Fabulich was right that it could be a very successful business park. And again, it's been a reflection of the planning and the vision that the commissioners in TAMS had back in the 50s and the wherewithal to stick with it. And it had some ups and downs, but I think it's been quite a success story. So
thank you.
Any questions, you can ask Scott Francis, but
he's right there in the back. Well, yes, the one question, of course, is what's left?
I believe there's one parcel.
The final parcel. Yeah.
And then I get out of my depth. So if
Scott's on his way up.
Okay. Sure. Have a seat.
So we closed on one parcel towards the end of the year, and we have two parcels, but we marketed them as one parcel. They're under a pending sale, and they're expected to close towards the end of this year. Those are two parcels that total about 43 acres, but there's only about 20 acres that's usable. And that's the parcel that people recognize as Lake Frederickson. That's the only one that's left, but it's pending sale right now.
Great. Other questions?
Just a comment. I really appreciate that. But I think one of the other lessons learned, just by virtue of the importance of Canyon Road for the development, was the intergovernmental cooperation and agreement, the work of Pierce County, the work of the state of Washington, FIMZIP board, you know, all sorts of funding agencies that stepped up to the table and made sure that the transportation system was in place to allow that development. So that's a big part of this story as well.
Commissioner Marzano?
Oh, just real quickly, and I appreciate the update. It's something that we're going to be moving forward to in our strategic plan, is what's next? And I think that's going to be a question among us all about where do we go now?
I also think that, you know, if you look at it, not only is it a good story for the port, the planning that went on, but the relationship that it happened to be that there was a lot of vacant property, turned out to be vacant property by private landowners, and added to this overall idea. And I think it's a very powerful statement in terms of when the public's working with the private side. The other piece is that, you know, we oftentimes talk about wanting to get more jobs in Pierce County rather than being a bedroom community. And the real focus here is on good paying jobs. And that's why I think that when you look at it, like an educational institution like what we're sitting in here, and the role and relationship of making certain good paying jobs stay in our community. And I think that's what gets me more excited every day being a commissioner is not just the term economic development, but making a difference in our communities throughout Pierce County.
Yeah, that's what it really is. So thank you. Thank you. Any other thoughts?
Commissioner Petrich, I could just add just very quickly, several of you have mentioned the advisability of having some sort of a community celebration, I'll use that word for lack of a better word, some sort of organized outreach when we finally get that last piece under contract and signed, but then we'll be done. You'll be putting the ribbon on Frederickson, so to speak. And we're gonna plan to do that when that finally happens in the final quarter of the year. And frankly, it'll be a great way to highlight the importance of the strategic plan that we're about to embark on, because we're gonna be creating the next type of thinking like that. Yeah. We'll probably call it Petrichville.
I was just hoping there'd be a lot of balloons at the party like there was at the opening.
The world has changed in the last 50 years, though.
What?
The world has changed in the last 50 years. You don't find Barrow Landing, you have a lot more people now than you had 50, 60 years ago. Yeah. And a lot more anti-business kind of thought. A lot more
traffic. I think more than anything, Frederickson is definitely a model of possibilities and possibility thinking and what has occurred. So it will be a great celebration when that final parcel goes, when the ribbon is tied. Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Ed. That's great. These are there's some people around, I think, that still would like to see these pictures from the way they looked at that time. Thank you very much. All right, then our opportunity now is to move to our action agenda. Scott Francis, welcome back. You are number one on the list for the authorization for a work associated with some building demolition. So we
build property and we demolish property.
Yes.
It's all part of the cycle.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm going to introduce this next item for Hughes, which will do the presentation on the demolition.
Great.
This item, I'd like to introduce it. It's a demolition of four buildings at the port that are beyond their economic life. Two buildings are located on East 11th Street, close to the main 11th Street gate that services Husky Terminals and East Sitcom Terminals. These parcels, the 11th Street parcels, are relatively small, but they're adjacent to other properties that we've recently demolished buildings on, so they open up a larger usable area along 11th Street. These properties will be used for truck and chassis parking and overflow ILW parking in the short term. Eventually, the property will be used for terminal expansion, and those properties, we expect that they would generate about $60,000 a year once cleared. We also have a building located at 3502 Lincoln, which is at the corner of Lincoln and Taylor. It's been vacant for about 10 years, and it's been hit by metal thieves and is in a state of disrepair and becoming a liability. This property is adjacent to the Carlisle Terminal and will likely, Carlisle, we believe, will absorb this property once it's cleared and usable. In the short term, it may be used for truck and chassis parking. And again, this property we would expect would also generate about $60,000 a year in rent once it's cleared. The fourth building is located at 1110 Alexander. It's on a 5-acre waterfront parcel on the Blair Waterway. It's located just south of Tote and north of Graymont. It's been vacant for 3 years. The building currently, it's unsafe and is definitely a liability. The removal of this building is needed to open up that space for future lease and marketability. And this parcel, once it's cleared and available, we feel it would generate about $300,000 per year of rent. So in conclusion, the real estate department strongly supports this project for the demolition of these buildings, for it would allow us to turn non-performing assets into performing assets and remove the current liabilities that are associated with these properties.
Thank you. Other questions?
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate the background. And good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm here today to request project authorization in the amount of $2,077,000 for a total authorized amount of $2,458,000 for the building demolitions at 2306 and 2338 East 11th Street, 3502 Lincoln Avenue, and 1110 Alexander Avenue, with master identification numbers 101442.01, 0.02, and 0.03. And 101452.01. To provide more insight into where these properties are located, we have an aerial view here of the Port of Tacoma with the Blair Waterway running down the middle of the image. The buildings are highlighted in red. Moving from left to right, we have the 2306 11th Street property, which was formerly occupied by Fasco, a regional fastener distributor. Next is 2338 11th Street, which was a mini storage facility and screen printing business. Crossing the Blair Waterway, we have the 1110 Alexander Avenue property, which was occupied by Orion Marine Construction, a heavy civil marine contractor. And finally, on the upper right is the Lincoln Avenue property, which was occupied and used by American Fast Freight, transportations and logistics company. And to give you an idea of what these structures look like and their size, first we have 2306 East 11th Street, which is a commercial one-story warehouse building with mezzanine storage overhead. It's approximately 4,800 square feet in size. And the construction is wood framing with metal siding, with the exception of the front here, which you can see is constructed from brick and mortar. The 2338 11th Street property is also one story, with the exception of a small section in back behind this image that is two stories in height. It is larger, about 12,800 square feet in size, and it appears that it was made up of originally separate buildings that were connected over time due to different needs. It's wood framing and wood siding with some brick and concrete construction. Third, we have the 3502 Lincoln property, one story as well, approximately 10,200 square feet. Construction is wood framing and wood siding again. And last is the largest of the structures on Alexander Avenue. It's approximately 28,000 square feet, also made up of multiple structures that appear to have been built out over time due to increasing space needs. And its construction is metal and wood framing, depending on which build out we're talking about, and metal and wood siding.
Were there some boats built in that building?
What was these? Yes, that was the marine construction operation, yes. Okay. Scope of the project includes design and specifications for the work, hazardous materials investigation, and any required abatement. Demolition of the buildings and surrounding landscaping such that a level site will be left at each property, and of course disposal of all of the building materials. I think
can I ask a quick question while you're
yes.
on that last one? On the hazardous material, has there been any investigation? Have we looked at that already in some of the buildings? And
yes, we have, and I will touch on that in a coming slide. And so I won't repeat this, but the project benefits, I think Scott did a great job of describing that, so thank you again. If authorized, we would plan to advertise bids in August of 2019, have bid opening in September, contract award in October, move forward with implementation through July of 2020. I'll add that this timeline considers demolition of all four buildings under one contract, and note that the Alexander Avenue property was in addition to the original three building scope. And for reasons to also touch on, that will come with additional permitting reviews, which have potential to change or impact this schedule. Estimated cost of the construction is $2,077,000. The estimated budget for the project is $2,458,000. And the current capital investment plan allocates $2,458,000 for the project.
So that
and here we can see a breakdown per building over those costs, including this current request, previous requests, and overall total cost. And if there's no questions, I'll move forward.
Could I ask a question on that?
Yes.
Commissioner Marzano, actually his comment was it's deconstruction. And it reminded me, one of the frustrations I have is how much money we have to spend on the design piece for this. Because mm-hmm. If you add that up, I don't know, I'm assuming we're somewhere between 380 to 400,000 just for the design component.
Correct.
And so help me a little bit, because I've often thought, like in a case like this, is our ability to do a design construct scenario rather than us doing all the designing. Is that possible to do in a demolition? Do you understand what I'm asking is a new construction, the idea that the contractor can do a design build? And why is it that we have to spend all this money up front? Why can't we just let the demolition contractor do the design? We've got information, some information, and why wouldn't it be more effective for the contractor to develop the plan rather than us?
It may be possible. I do not know if that's something we've considered, but I can say that when we do put together our specifications, we do add a large number of port-specific requirements that would be our responsibility. But I'll let Trevor
laugh. Trevor, I'm heard here.
I knew you'd find a way to drag me up.
Yeah. Well, we knew you were there, Trevor.
So yeah, we don't do design. Design build projects, which a lot of agencies do that. We've never done that. Demolition is certainly a unique part, and it's usually pretty straightforward. There are restrictions, limitations to design build, and very difficult and challenging, and may not necessarily be any cheaper than what we're doing. The work associated with doing this, of course, the hazmat investigation that's done, and I forget the cost. It was roughly average about $8,000 to $10,000 per building.
A little more.
A little more than that. And then this is putting together a bid package. So, you still have to take, even if you were doing a design bid build, you still have to put effort into presenting that to a contractor or contractor slash engineer or designer to do that. So I'm not sure that you're really going to save necessarily any money. The benefit here is that I think these numbers are somewhat conservative. Most of these buildings are completely trashed. The first building that you looked at there is actually a very nice building, and there's probably likely quite a bit of salvage value in the materials. So I don't think it'll probably cost as much as what's estimated, but we can't assume that. So we have to assume they're taking it and taking it off to either a landfill or a recycling facility.
I guess my real question is that I'd like to someday get a little more familiarity with design build versus the way we do it. Because I've thought that there were some savings on a design build, and not every project maybe is set up for that. But when I look at this, it's just like, wow, that's a lot of money for design to demo a project, particularly given the fact that we've already spent a lot of money identifying the hazardous material or the lead paint or whatever it is. And I just have a real problem with that.
And that's fine. We certainly can discuss that in the future.
Great. Commissioner McCarthy also had a question for you.
As long as we have Trevor up here, I'll take the opportunity as well. It's a cost question. One of the things I think I've discovered with regard to demolition of cranes, for example, is which cost a lot of money, is that I think we end up paying more for demolitions than private industry or company could do relative to cranes. Do you find that with public government demolition, are we spending about the same that private company or industry or property owner would pay, or do you have any sense of that?
I really have no idea what private's doing. I certainly have been involved with the crane, and I know that you had a interesting meeting and discussion about the cranes at the previous meeting. And you know, with regard to the cranes, it all depends on the limitations that you have. So there were challenges in Seattle that I'm hoping we don't have the same limitations on space, on how you have to disassemble these. That would drop that cost significantly. You literally could deconstruct one of those cranes in 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it really doesn't need to take long, but it depends on how much space you give them and flexibility.
Okay.
But yeah, I have no idea what the cost of demolishing, having a private company go demolish a building.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks very much. It's always good to have that answer right here in the room.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Trevor.
All right. On the topic of permitting, this, in addition to the demolition permits required for the work, the project is subject to CEPA review. Regarding the Alexander Avenue property, it is within 200 feet of the Blair Waterway shoreline, and we are seeking a permit exemption. Ultimately, the City of Tacoma will make that determination if it qualifies. Remediation. To start, the subject properties are not located on known remediation sites. To answer your question, Commissioner Marzano, we did complete hazardous building material assessments for each building, and we did sample throughout. Select samples did come back positive for asbestos-containing materials, lead-based paint, and PCBs. So our specifications include all the abatement, lead paint, and PCB handling and disposal requirements to do it safely and ensure the material goes to permitted legal facilities. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Right there. I think that helps explain some of the engineering costs too.
Yeah.
Right. Moving on to stormwater and air quality. Although there are no particularly unique stormwater and air quality requirements that will apply, we will implement our standard erosion and sediment control planning process in addition to stormwater best management practices. Further, emission requirements will be applied to any construction equipment, and dust control BMPs will be implemented. So in conclusion, I am requesting project authorization in the amount of $2,077,000 for a total authorized amount of $2,000,000 $458,000 for the building demolitions at 2306 and 2338 East 11th Street, 3502 Lincoln Avenue, and 1110 Alexander Avenue, with master identification numbers 101442.01, 101442.02, 101442.03, and 101452.01.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a motion?
So move.
Second.
A second. Thank you. Any further questions or clarifications? One more, Commissioner.
One more question, and Scott Francis may be able to answer this. A lot of times when we're doing cleanup or destruction, timing is everything because there's a lot of projects that we could do. So our timing is sometimes based on a foreseeable future income that may be fairly soon. Are these projects, are you foreseeing some potential tenants in the near future that would move us to take this step at this time?
Yes, Commissioner, at the 11th Street properties, the demolitions that we're doing now, one of the buildings, it's right in the middle of a strip that we've been opening up for the last couple of years for truck queuing and other uses that I mentioned. So that's it'll be nice to get that out. It'll make a larger piece more usable. The property at 3502 Lincoln on the corner of Lincoln and Taylor, as I mentioned, that's adjacent to the Carlisle Terminal. They anticipate some growth opportunity and we think that'll be absorbed, but we're also getting a number of requests for additional truck and chassis parking so we can use it that way in the interim once it's available. The property on the Blair Waterway at 1110 Alexander, that's a nice little piece of property. It would be very suitable for a small tug and barge operation. Previously, it had a marine construction company there, and we've been working with a couple different companies that are interested in that property. So we believe that once it's available, we can definitely lease that property. So to your answer is yes to all three of those.
Okay, thank you.
That's fantastic. All right. With no further questions, I think we'll call for the vote. All those in favor of accepting the demolition proposal, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Please move right ahead then. Thank you so much. All right. Our next item, Deanna Seaman, the extension on the interlocal agreement with the City of Tacoma. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Always a great way to end a meeting talking about stormwater.
Always.
So I'm Deanna Seaman with the Northwest Seaport Alliance and the Port of Tacoma, here today to request a one-year extension to our interlocal agreement with the City of Tacoma for mutual cooperation and support for agency stormwater management. Before I get started on the project, I want to acknowledge that Marita Trohimovich from the City of Tacoma is here from their Environmental Services Group. She's been my partner in navigating this process as we go through these updates. So again, I'm here to request authorization to execute a one-year extension of the interlocal agreement with the City of Tacoma for mutual cooperation and support regarding agency stormwater management. The City of Tacoma and the Port of Tacoma entered into this ILA originally in July of 2013 to settle out an appeal process on surface water fees. It was this, so these ILA is a direct result of that appeal. It's designed to create cooperation between the two municipal stormwater permittees, City of Tacoma and the Port of Tacoma. They are a phase one permittee. We are a secondary permittee to that phase one permit. What that settlement agreement and this ILA memorialized were new lower surface water fee structures for things like wetlands, the Gogleheide wetlands, and other mitigation sites, as well as properties that do not discharge through the City of Tacoma's MS4. So, for example, our major terminals do not actually intersect the city's MS4. Other sites like what was the Educator Building did impact the city's infrastructure. The benefits of the ILA include joint inspections between with the City of Tacoma and the Port of Tacoma so that we bother our tenants once and not multiple times during the course of a year. We work together on spill response, specifically on those spills that intersect both city property as well as port property. And the biggest benefit we have seen is courtesy review of site development plans. Specifically, when we were redeveloping the Kaiser property to put in the auto terminal there, we received a courtesy review of our stormwater system that sped up the acceptance and permitting for the site development at that property. So that was a very, very helpful aspect of this ILA. So this is a one-year extension request, which allows us to work together on potential changes and a longer-term, more durable solution to our relationship between the intersection of these two permits. There are minor proposals this year. When we approved one last year, it was a straight no change extension this year. However, we have updated the labor rates because, you know, people's salaries do increase. And we also have an updated laboratory fee schedule. So we actually will pay current rates for laboratory fees. It also extends the time for another year, so September 30th, 2020, so we will revisit this subject next year. There is no funding requested with this request. On the permitting side, this will continue our rapid courtesy stormwater system review for site development permits as the most obvious benefit of this. There are no impacts to remediation. Under water quality, this request will give us an additional amount of time to work through some programmatic changes. As you know, the new MS4 permit was released, and we're all digesting what those changes actually mean. We did receive word yesterday that there is an appeal of the stormwater permit from various third-party entities, so we'll be curious to see how that influences the new municipal permit, which, of course, may or may not impact this ILA. We'll keep you posted. There are no impacts to air quality. So in conclusion, I'm here to request authorization to execute another one-year extension of the interlocal agreement with the City of Tacoma for mutual cooperation and support regarding agency stormwater management through September 30th of 2020.
Thank you. Do I hear a motion?
Motion.
I move second.
Second.
Second. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
It's great to see both us and the City of Tacoma working together like this moving forward.
It's been a good effort. Yes, sir.
Good. Is there anything that you'd like to add from the City of Tacoma? We're always happy to have you come on up.
You just made her day.
Hi, I'm Marita Trahemelvich, and I'm the City of Tacoma's NPDS permit manager. And I just like to say it's great to work with Deanna, and we really appreciate, you know, throughout departments in the city, we really appreciate the cooperative nature of this agreement and working with the port. It's, I think, beneficial to all.
Great. That's great to hear, and great to hear basically the savings that can be accomplished by working together and the collaboration that happens for everybody, for our tenants and for the whole community. So thank you for making this happen. Any other questions from my commissioners? All right, then. All those in favor of extending the ILA between the city and the port, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you. Continue on.
See you next year.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. As I mentioned before, item C has been pulled from the agenda, and this brings us to general business. Eric Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quickly, I'll remain seated because we don't have a podium to stand at, which I normally would like to do, but a couple of things. On the events front, I'm going to mention two events that occurred in the past month and point out one that's going to occur in the next month. On July 21st, we had our Maritime Fest boat tours, which were a big success. Over 1,200 people showed up and took those boat tours. It was a sunny day. Public affairs staff did a great job, and lots of port folks from all over the organization volunteered to pitch in and work the booths and so on. But it was just it was a great thing to see. Some of you, most of you were there, and I want to note that was a big success. And then two of you, along with me, attended the Puyallup River Bridge renaming ceremony on the 9th of August. And you may want to make some comments about that. I don't know, but I'll just call it for the record that the port was represented at that event. And then next month, the 21st, the port is having the Touch a Truck event at the port, which is something that's, I've actually never seen it, but I understand it's pretty fun. Yeah. and they're gathering volunteers. If you want to help out that day, let us know. On the announcements front, I already mentioned that we're going to be coming to you. I'll be coming to you next month to get approval to proceed with the strategic plan. I think technically that plan will probably be under the master policy limit, but I think it's advisable for the commission to stay on top of that, be fully aware of what's going on and involved, and I want to get that approval from you next month.
Great.
Some of you, probably all of you, noticed that Tote Maritime Company has relocated to, or has announced that they're going to relocate to Tacoma. So one of our customers' headquarters is coming south, and that's a good thing, I think, for the Tacoma community and for the Port of Tacoma. You probably saw in the news that interest rates have hit record lows. 30-year T-bills are below 2% yesterday. It's the first time that's ever happened. So I buttonholed our finance director this morning and said, what does that mean for refinancing debt for the port? He had a big smile on his face. Said, we are going to be very aggressive in that regard. So I don't have any news for you, and I'm not going to call him up here because I didn't tell him I would. But rest assured that those headlines have not escaped our notice, and we're going to be seeing if we can use that event to our advantage. And then finally, I'll close by saying our next meeting is September 26th. That's 1 week later than normal. They moved it 1 week because the executive director is going to be gone.
Oh.
On a long planned
trip. Reason. It's a good reason.
So that's the reason for that. So that'll be a special meeting as well.
Okay, fantastic.
And that's it for me.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Juliet reminds me there's a planning session tomorrow, a work session tomorrow with the University of Washington Tacoma at the Fabric Center. Yes. No action will be taken, but you're going to get a briefing from the UWT. Is that at noon?
Yes.
Yeah, noon at the Fabulous Center. Thanks.
I'm glad that that's going to happen, and I'm sorry to be missing it, but I know that the program that, as it was presented at UWT, was really very, very good, and I hope everybody enjoys it.
I'll be there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Commissioner comment at this time. We have had our public comment, and so I'm calling on Commissioner comment, Commissioner Marzano.
Hey, just a real quick thank you to all the staff for the with regards to the boat tour, but all the things that you do throughout the year, the farmers markets and different things, they do a heck of a job representing the port, taking time off their schedules and stuff, and just a great job they all do. Just thank you.
I echo the same comments. I'm always amazed at the commitment our staff has to different community events and a variety of activities way beyond perhaps their real job description. The other thing that I would like to mention, though, is that there was by Tom Siegel, the superintendent of Bethel School District, when he made his comments about public transportation, whether it's Meridian or Canyon. Eric, I'd like for maybe you to think about that comment and see if there's a role. I don't know to whether or not how we want to position ourselves on that topic, but it's a huge topic here in this local community. And if we're really going to have employment centers, we need to make certain we've got a responsibility to make certain that we have adequate public infrastructure to support that, not just roads itself. So I'd like to follow up with that to see whether or not we want to actually position ourselves on that issue.
Great, thank you. Commissioner Johnson.
Just a couple comments on education. I think education is extremely important. I think skill-based education is critical. Whether you're a doctor, an engineer, or a truck driver, everybody has to have a skill. And one of the things that was said in the presentation this morning that this organization provides, I think it's very important because they used to have one, you don't ask kids what they want to be in life. Sometimes the best question is, what don't you want to be in life and what don't you want to have? And I found every one of them has an answer to that question. They're not quite sure what they want to be, but they sure as heck know what they don't want. And a place like this provides that insight and provides, otherwise you're going to wind up being where you don't want to be. Mm-hmm. And parents don't cover that ground a lot either. So it's very important to know where you don't want to be, because you're going to wind up there. And this organization helps kids address that question and gets them off to a much better start, much more profitable and fun lives.
Yeah, it's great. I'm really glad to be here today.
And then Commissioner McCarthy and I actually have...
Sure.
Do you want to do the, any other comment, or should we jointly do our sub-area plan comment?
I have a couple of quick comments.
Sure.
The sound system here is great.
Wow.
Haven't had that for a long time. Just the visual of having the board face the citizens is great. Well-lit room. Thank you for all that undertook the effort to improve where our meeting location would be. So thank you for that. Touch a truck program, I'm going to at least take one grandchild, if not more, to that. Did have the opportunity to attend with Commissioner Petrich the renaming of the Puyallup Bridge, which was an interesting event, a good event, and so appreciate that you were there. I do want to touch bases with our staff people that are involved in the ST3 project and get some kind of current update. I know I'm getting some reports, but I've had some citizen comments regarding final decisions of where the stations will be near the tide flat. So I wanted to touch bases with someone there. Right. And that leads me to the final issue, if you want to tee it off, or you
sure.
want me to?
Sure, I would be happy to. And you've been engaged in it for quite a while, and I really appreciate the work that you've done in interviewing people. That's been really important. But so just for everyone's interest and benefit, the sub-area plan, as you know, is underway. And the work plan, the work that Commissioner Meyer and Commissioner McCarthy did for the past, 18, 24 months, it seems like, has been accepted. And as part of the work plan for the sub-area plan is that there is a stakeholder group that is involved. It's called the Tide Flat Stakeholder Advisory Group, so that it is known as TAG. And so here's the way it works. The TAG will consist of no more than 21 individuals, and it consists of representatives from affected communities, from different organizations, from businesses. Some of these members will be selected by governments, others are selected by associations or organized councils that will select a representative to participate in those meetings. As you know, there are 5 parties to the sub-area plan, and that includes the Port of Tacoma, the City of Tacoma, City of Fife, Pierce County, and the Puyallup Tribe. So in many cases, they are the ones also appointing some representatives to the TAG, to the stakeholders group. So particularly Commissioner McCarthy and partially Commissioner Meyer, and I participated also, and much thanks to Yvette Mason, right there, right? Right. Deanna, for the work that you have done in participating in the interviews, et cetera. We have 2 entities representing that we're able to identify for the business and industry category, and that is a entity that is a port tenant. So 2 people that have been interviewed and who have expressed interest in serving on that stakeholders group committee are Greg Underbrink from Ports America. He's currently the vice president of business development there. He's been more than 20 years, actually, in the shipping and trucking community, and he's lived in Pierce County for 20 years, so he definitely knows the tide flats and activities down there. Brenda Martin is the other person in that same category. She is at Husky. She is the vice president of Husky Terminals and the terminal manager there. She has had 15 years in the shipping industry and is also a Pierce County resident. And then the second area where we have the opportunity to appoint a stakeholder is on the environmental side, and that's in the water quality representative. And the 2 people who have expressed interest are Joel Baker, UWT Director, Center for Urban Waters. He has a BS in environmental chemistry from SUNY in Syracuse, and an MS and PhDs in civil and environmental engineering from the University of Minnesota, and has been definitely engaged in the stormwater issues and in the environmental issues of Puget Sound and our tide flats area for, goodness, it's probably about 15 years now. Bruce Martin is the other person who is interested in the position. Bruce Martin is from West Rock, energy resource manager for West Rock. He's a Tacoma native. He's a chemical engineer with a degree from University of Washington. He's worked in wood products and is an environmental consultant in the power industry. So all of these people have tremendous backgrounds and interests, and particularly are interested in the outcome of the sub-area plan. So Commissioner McCarthy, I said very much, but please.
Sure. So those are the four people, I think, that we've identified that would be suitable to serve in the two categories of appointment that we have as either representative or alternate representative. I will say that we interviewed some other people in other industries, transportation, trucking, things of that nature. And even though we don't have appointments in those fields, some of the other entities do. For example, the city of Fife has an appointment in Tide Flat business that's non-port property. They also have an appointment in the area of transportation. Pierce County, for example, has an appointment from the Frederickson Industrial Group as well as another appointment. So that's just an example. So we've interviewed some other people. Commissioner Meyer did as well. And we're going to be talking with some of the other entities involved in the appointment process and give them some information as to some good candidates that are out there.
Great, thank you. So if there's any questions that folks have, please.
Could I just ask, yes, as a point of clarification, the sequence that you read off the names, is the first name that you read, is that the actual member? And the second name is the alternate, or exactly?
It's an opportunity for a member and an alternate. And I'm not sure that it's actually been determined yet exactly who will play which position. I think it's
okay. I think we wanted to report to you, and right. I think we have some sense of who we might be recommending.
I would look forward to your input relative to going forward with being clear about who's playing the key role and who's the alternate.
Right.
Because I will suggest to you, thank you for taking that time. That required a lot of time, extra time, and I got involved a little bit, but you've got some good names there, and I feel very, very comfortable with those names.
Great. Well, it's a good thing to be working on, and of course it's so important to us to be this involvement and the kind of leadership that we have in the sub-area plan. So thank you very much. Thank you to everyone. I want to say thank you. Of course, the boat tours were fantastic. I had grandchildren from California up here that day, and it was hotter than anything. So
it was beautiful on the first one.
It was absolutely beautiful.
Anybody who gets up early can say that, right? Right. So again, thank you very, very much for suggesting that we be here today for our meeting and for the hospitality shown to us. We look forward to hearing more about the work of Pierce County Skills Center. And thank you very much for the cup. Right. So if there's no further business, our meeting is adjourned. Thank